けだし、みたいな。Sorry for that your name again.
It's Philip.
Philip, okay. All veterans here. Well, I'm trying to decide whether we should go ahead with our scheduled format. Or, since you're all veterans, we can have kind of a more, well, not more, but we can talk about something else.
Yes, could you, would you be able to explain to me God glorification sacrifice?
What's that?
God glorification sacrifice?
Yes, we can. You can answer that.
Do you want the translation?
Right now, though. Yeah, that's alright, I'll start in. We'll start in and see where it goes. I was curious. You all are adept persons, competent, intelligent, discriminating, wise in the ways of the world. So I was curious. I've asked this question before in Christchurch, one of our public gatherings. That's a very interesting answer. What is it that would discourage or inhibit you about practicing Krishna consciousness?
I don't
know anything. Let's have an honest round table discussion. Regardless of whether it is something you consider core, or even something you consider superficial, but still less. Yeah. Whatever. Taking into account that Bhagavad Gita says, everyone is acting, everyone's doing something. No one fails to act even for a moment. This is the underlying point in Bhagavad Gita, that action must be there. Even a yogi who's sitting on top of the Himalaya mountains in meditation, he's also active. Although he's physically inactive, his mind is active. And also Bhagavad Gita will teach you that desire is also a kind of activity, very subtle, it's the most subtle form of activity. It's like the fragrance of a flower. Very subtle, but it's there. So, we all are active. I'm active, they're active, you're all active. So it's not like we're not investing our energies in things. And it's not that we don't have our goals. It's quite popular these days, or getting to be more popular, that people say, no need to have a grand goal, just take every day as it comes and adjust yourself accordingly, like you're sailing a sailboat. Of course, after all is said and done, you can always find a goal, a grand goal, underneath even the goalless people. So taking all this into account, I was just curious. You all have been coming here for a while. You know a little bit about Bhagavad Gita, Tibet. Some of you may know a lot. You know something. You have some idea, some notion. But Krishna is what Krishna consciousness is, so just to help in our interaction with people and making us more sensitive. So instead of me always saying things or the whatever speaker is here, I figured we'd turn it over to you. If you are ruminating over all the various things you could do with your life or things you could investigate, you know, for example, if you were thinking, perhaps you should try out for the All Blacks, then you would think, well, I'm not big enough, I don't have that ability. Or you might think, perhaps you should go to the uni and get your degree or an advanced degree. Then you think, I don't feel like going to, you know, going through all that studying and, you know, I don't feel like being a student, or can't stand being locked up in classrooms or something. So in other words, we always think about these kind of things. Or you had an opportunity perhaps to consider going to London, but then you think, it's like while all the way over there. We're always, processing various decisions. So then, let's just say you thought, oh, Hare Krishna, Krishna consciousness, what's that? I was curious what how your mind would freely associate with that. What would come up in your mind? So, without further ado, I turn it all over to you. Wait, are you ready to start off?
I'll let someone else do.
Mark! Yeah, say whatever you like, It's sweet. Well, anyone else?
Can you start right back at that first question that you asked?
Yeah.
So what would inhibit us?
Yeah, what would inhibit you? When you're thinking of various things that you could toy around with or explore, when you think of whatever you know about Bhagavad Gita and Krishna consciousness, what would inhibit you from, Just like we're doing market research. Why wouldn't you buy this product? Well, the price is too high, I don't like the label, or I don't need it, or, Sometimes you see advertising like that, why not Toyota? Why should you not have a Kelvinator for your home? Yes?
Mind concoctions? Like the mind is always, it wants all its own opinions, and you don't want to drop your own opinions because there's no discipline in them. That's for me.
No discipline in what?
In my own mind concoctions, like if I make my own theories on life, there's no discipline to follow them. It's like an easier path.
Oh, I see. If you make your own notions and your own standards, then you don't have to have any discipline.
Yep.
Because you can make them and break them as you like.
Yep.
That's an honest answer. And that implies what?
Go through my Krishna consciousness at this phase and not stop speculating and everything. Drop all my opinions and never listen to my own mind. And just obey this book.
You have a pen and paper? Yes, you can write this down. Okay. Stop following my own mind and follow some book. Anyone else? See, he said whatever he wanted to.
Well, for me, I'm not sure what it means. I know what would inhibit me would be probably my own attachments and things like that, but what would inhibit me from following Krishna consciousness, I'm not sure what that is.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. You've read by me a little bit?
I know what I've done.
Nice. So, in other words, is it what you're saying that before you do something or explore something, you need to know more about it?
Yeah.
And
unfortunately.
And you're kind of like that with everything you do in your life.
Yeah.
Okay.
One would be, would inhibit me would be the activity that I'm doing. I'm quite focused in on it. And I see a lot of similarities aligned with Krishna consciousness. And I think some of the things that would inhibit me also is some of the...
Well, first of all, you said the activity you're doing, can you be more specific? I mean, is it like parachute gliding or something? Or?
Oh, no, more like on a spiritual experience. And taking it through for with disciplining my body and mind.
So you're doing it?
Yeah. And I'm sort of exploring and things, and a lot of the things that I've been doing aligned but not Krishna consciousness.
Would you mind being specific or?
Say for example, I've started being a vegetarian about 4 years ago. But like I've found out in the last couple of weeks that Krishna consciousness don't eat onions and garlic. And I was asking a couple of questions about the ignorance, mode of ignorance, and I found out that there was a chapter 14 that I need to read and just go through and try and understand that. Getting up early, doing exercising, Tibetan yoga, and stretches early in the morning, about 4 o'clock. They're up through about 6, and meditation, and carrying that, and maintaining a discipline to, I think a lot of it would be getting rid of just being with Wheeler instead of being the judgmental part of me coming through. Like if someone comes along and they do something, then discipline my thoughts around the judging of the person and just allowing them just to be who they are, and that's for them to be and act in however they want to act. That's the sort of practice that I'm at the moment.
What kind of meditation is it?
I'm just trying to be still. I find quite difficult to slow or stop the chatter. Just being chatter in my mind, trying to say keep it nice and clear, and but all these things keep flying in. And
what, if I may ask, what motivated you to try to still your mind?
The noise.
So something you yourself decided to do.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just too much.
And you kind of divided your own meditation to still your mind?
Oh, no, I meet with a group of people and just do exercise with them, but I just sort of do my own little bits after exercising and yoga, and just having to have sort of similar interests in a spiritual path. Sometimes we come here and listen. Get different concepts and things and understanding. I'll learn.
Did you skip you or?
No, I said a little bit.
Oh, that's right. Pleasure, I think.
I don't know, for some strange reason I don't want to limit myself. I agree with a lot of the understandings. Something just makes me hold back. And all my life, although my life isn't very big, all my life I've relied on myself, so it seems hard not to rely on yourself. It's a very... Yeah, I can't think of the word, but it's very shocking to the system to think, shucks, maybe the way I think. It's just a conditioning to get everything that I want. And I'm the strongest source, but it's hard to weigh that rationally because...
You know, you said it very brilliantly, but... You said it very brilliantly, but go on.
Okay. Probably... I noticed with the guys, when I went to Wellington with them, with Bhakti Manwick and Sanjay Maharaj and everyone, they all wanted to stay celibate, all their lives, they just wanted to be monks, and I find that sort of hard, this is like my plan in life, yeah, and I could keep going,
Go on. Steve says go on, and very educational, and I think this is good,
Yeah, I guess that's about it.
The most important thing last.
I think that was it.
No, I was asking, was the most important thing last? Okay.
I think this is a lot I need to...
A lot of what?
A lot I need to weigh out for myself.
You want to limit yourself. So what does that... Can you, just for my benefit, could you expand on that more?
Okay. Well, if you follow one specific discipline, then that's it. Okay, regardless of if it is, like the be-all and end-all as a such, then if all I do is follow that, I'll never know what anything else has to offer, whether it be nothing, whether it be something.
Can we ask you?
Certainly, yes. I suppose the one area I have a bit of difficulty with is the fact that it is the same sort of focus on the one thing, which is Krishna. And I suppose I feel the same in the fact that I think there might be more out there, and I'm just at a point in my life where I'm searching. I'm not quite sure. So is there just the one guiding light, which is Krishna? Or is there something beyond there?
Mm-hmm.
Is there, I suppose, what you might call Brahman? And at the moment, I'm struggling.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking, I'm searching, I'm questioning.
Okay. Any ideas about how you will search and what to search for?
Through meditation, through coming down here on the Friday night, through doing meditation classes elsewhere, through reading books, not just this book, but reading other books, through talking to other people, through reflecting what their thoughts are and what their aspirations are.
Mm-hmm.
Just basically keeping your eyes and ears open all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's really quite nice.
Keeping your eyes and ears open all the time.
And your senses. That's what's wrong with you.
No!
And your...
That's what you operate with.
Yes.
That's also a sense.
Yeah.
So you have all that down and all these points? For those of you who came late, we're having a discussion. Every once in a while we do this, not too often, but we're asking everyone that you have so many options in life, so many things that you might choose to explore or even dedicate yourself to. Now, when you think about Krishna and Bhagavad Gita and the topics and processes we're discussing on Friday night, what inhibits you from delving in that direction further? We've had answers from all different kinds of answers. Doing a little market research, because I can see these advertisements. They're explaining these advertisements. Why not Toyota? Why wouldn't you buy a Toyota? And of course you would respond, well, I don't have enough money, or I like Ford better, or I don't like cars anyway, or cars pollute, or who knows. But that's what everyone's been talking about, in case you wondered when you came in. Can we turn to one of our late arrivals? Okay.
Oh, yeah. For you too.
I guess that for me, I have felt huge senses of a grandiose sense of oneness and a sense of selflessness to that oneness on a few occasions in my life, and very much enjoy seeking that further and moving toward that shore. But as yet, I'm not prepared to give it a name. Because it is almost seems nameless. It is a sensation. Through all the senses. As yet, I'm not prepared to give it a name. Or assign a certain doctrine to it that I think would be most applicable. Or more move for a particular path than not to get to water. And this really is enough for me. I sort of have a feeling of enoughness. And it really is. It is when I am close to, well, in the bush, I guess, in the nature beside a river, it's a state of enoughness, and all is quiet. Mm. There's no need to do much more at that point. At this point in my life, there's no calling to do much more. But I can get out of these sections. They can all be handled quite
domestically.
Is that
a joke?
You just he said enlightened already. I said no.
Okay.
I'm really scared of sensitizing myself to things, and I feel like with the potency of things have been taken out, and I just feel tickled up what I say. Because you know, like you say things you don't really believe because you just think socially. So I pay much respect to Krishna, because you know, when you look into their statue's eyes, you know, something kind of. But you know, I pay respect to a lot of things, but I can't really say much, and I'm, you know, I like to be on, I like to take the game. Try not to use language, but to intellectualize things. I'm such a big fan of.
So the question is very much like Krishna, why not?
Well, whatever you know about Krishna or Bhagavad Gita, yeah. Just from whatever you know.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you think you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just not do a whole thing, just get about what you
hear. Yeah, I'm wearing out pretty much sold on Krishna, aren't I?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
I'm pretty much sold on Krishna. But, and at the moment, I guess what I'm trying to do is experience direct truth. What's in the Bhagavad Gita, and if I can experience truth in it, then I'll adopt it now, if I can.
Mm-hmm.
And if it works out that if I can't, then obviously I just think, well, have I kind of missed the truth boat, or is it not true?
Mm-hmm.
And take it from there. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has been very helpful.
How would you explain that situation? As that young man was saying then, where...
What's your name?
This one now, sorry, because I don't know your name.
Oh, Clayton.
Clayton. Okay, what Clayton just said then, where he'd pursue like Krishna consciousness, and if he couldn't find the truth in it, he may move on, or he will move on. What if you were to pursue Krishna consciousness for so long, but then not find any real understanding or any real feeling or any... real, whatever, I don't know, I've never believed in anything 100%. But if I apply myself to this Krishna consciousness, and what say you didn't find out, what do you do then? You accept that maybe that isn't?
You never believed anything 100%.
Yeah.
You never thought you were the body.
For a while?
So you believe something 100%.
That's what I never thought about.
Steve's gonna look like very nasty all day, very wacky.
But I mean, it is though, because if you were told that the world was flat, which is what they used to think, you believed that the world was flat. Until you actually start to think about it, you'll never know the truth. Once you start to think about things, then you can find out that the world actually isn't flat, that's wrong. But I mean, if people had never thought, they would have never known.
So what if the world is kind of worth its fat? What does it mean? What's it going to do to me? I could still die tomorrow. I mean, maybe I'm using your analogy wrong.
No, that's fine. Yeah. I'm trying to come up with some labels at the moment, which is quite interesting.
It's a freaky thing, maybe we're just scared of imagining. And the thinking that would change it, maybe it's more experience as well.
Would change what?
Say an example of things like this, who's being flat,
mm-hmm.
thinking about suddenly realizing that it's round. Like that more than that.
contact experience in his own living.
Anything
else? Well, it'd be so hard to move towards the truth.
Are you?
I mean, no, I'm not trying to be lazy. You know,
are you?
I should be spoon-fed.
Are you? Shall we say? Making an overture and stirring things, is it?
No, I'm not trying to stir things.
No, I don't think, you know, I'm just asking. Are you? You're saying once again. Once again, what were you saying?
What did I say? Mm-hmm. I said, why would it be so hard to move towards the truth?
Well, since our body and mind are discussing Bhagavad Gita, in Bhagavad Gita it's explained that we have two problems in trying to understand the truth. Number one is that our senses are imperfect. There is a material body. Material body means senses. And these senses, including the mind, they are imperfect. They are limited. They can't perceive everything. As you well know, cats can see. Whatever you can see. Dogs can hear sounds you can't hear. And not only are the senses limited, but they also distort. You don't feel the earth moving. And the sun does not look to your eye as big as it actually is. Okay, that's one half. That, you can appreciate the first, this first part. Right? Now there's a second part, which is maybe a little more difficult to accept. That because we have pollution that we are inheriting from previous lives, that this pollution inhibits our ability to understand the truth. Just like when you're driving down the street on a rainy day and it's a muddy street, mud will splatter all over your windscreen and you can't see. That's your reaction for driving in the mud. So, that's the other half. That's why Krishna explains in the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita that only those who are free from a background of bad karmic activities, only those kind of persons can be eligible to understand it. So once again, there are two halves to this issue. First half is our senses, the sense problem. Senses are imperfect and they distort. The other half, however, is by our acting in the world, in this life and previous lives, without understanding universal law, we implicate ourselves in so many karmic activities and we get reaction. And what is the reaction? Mud on the windscreen. We can't see where we're going. So therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that if you want to understand the Supreme Truth, then you must have put an end to your bad karmic activities, you could say, sinful activities, and that you actually should have a background of cultivating good karmic activities of righteousness, as conventionally known, and you should no longer be attached to the dualities of delusion. Honor, dishonor, happiness, distress, poverty, wealth. In that kind of preliminary condition, with those kinds of preliminary qualifications, you can effectively search for the truth. But otherwise, without understanding, in all humility, that our senses are limited and imperfect, and without understanding that we're saddled with a burden of pollution from previous lives, we're going to be spinning our back wheels in the mud. How's that sound?
makes sense to me. If you've got carrying enough pollution from old lives, it's going to cloud any clarity of truth coming through.
In other words, what Bhagavad Gita will explain to you is that knowledge is state-specific. According to your state of consciousness, that determines what you can understand. In other words, it's not that you can just understand anything and everything, whether it's ordinary mathematics or transcendental knowledge, Krishna consciousness. It's not that you can just understand anything without taking into account the quality of your consciousness.
Can this be achieved by any means? Must it be by Krishna consciousness? Must it be?
Okay, let me just make sure I... So that's that enough to... So, you know, I'm sure we could talk for hours about this, but that's enough to give you something to reflect upon. Okay. Are you appointed?
Well, I was just wondering whether it must be achieved by Krishna consciousness. For you personally, does your enjoyment of it or your love of Krishna consciousness rely on its the infallibilities of other dogmas? What is your personal experience with other philosophical traditions or dogmas?
What do you mean by dogmas? That has a traditional uses that were now, you know, these days have a very, I'm not saying you meant that, but also has a very negative use. Most people, they don't remember the original uses of the word. They think it just means, dogma means anytime somebody tries to lay a trip on you, basically. You haven't thought of it, it's dogma. As he was, before you came, he was saying that when problem he had with the Bhagavad Gita and Krishna consciousness is that all his life he's had his own opinions, and he very humbly explained that the good thing about simply having his own opinions and making his own standards is that there's no discipline required. You can make your own standard, break it whenever you want to. So and generally anything that doesn't come out of your own mind, you think you call that dogma or something imposed upon you. So he made that point very nicely. So now you're asking,
is it just as likely that there are other means of achieving the same sense of purity or understanding of the imperfection of the senses or anything like that? Are there other means of doing that are just as valid? And is because through reading and living the lessons of Swami Prabhupada and the Bhagavad Gita by going through this process, is that to say that there aren't other means of achieving the same ends?
Alright. First then we have to understand what the end is. Just like if you're looking for gold and you don't know what it is, you're going to leave yourself open to be cheated. For example, if you go to a hardware store and ask for gold, the owner, what kind of fool is this? He'll go in the back of the store, come out with some yellow, to pay some metal yellow, and here's gold. So you have to know what you're looking for. Otherwise, how will you recognize? How will you know how to search? You have to know what you're looking for. So what Bhagavad Gita is doing is actually training you up in what you should be looking for. And in doing so, the purports actually tell you and explain to you what is the real thing and also what are alternative opinions you might have. It's a process of explaining reality and illusion side by side.
So Krishna consciousness is the only disillusion state that anyone can possibly
have. Okay, now still, there's no way we can answer that question unless we understand what is it that we're looking for. Now what would you call a disillusioned state?
It's not really something that I myself am prepared to answer outright, so much as I'm being interested in what the Krishna consciousness would define.
So you're honestly saying that you may not know what is a disillusioned state, but basically you're just...
I'll know when I'm disillusioned when I get there.
I just don't know.
So you're trusting?
Yeah.
What?
Trusting that I will get there again.
And what are you trusting?
Trusting a natural process and also
the natural process of what?
Of purification or
what natural? Can you please elucidate on this natural process of purification?
There really is nothing more to be said except the fact that I'm prepared to go through life and reap the riches of an abundant deep understanding, like the Bhagavad Gita, pick up this and then maybe move to the philosophy of the Maasai hut building wars. I don't know, it's all good. It's all good.
So, but you're, now, I'm seriously trying to understand, it's something you're trusting.
Trusting the natural process of moving through life.
Alright, write that down. Trusting the natural process of moving through life and moving through time.
Yeah.
As well,
and understanding my own intuitive.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Let's say I want to go to New York, and I don't know where New York is or what it's about. I just heard about New York. So, Emma, you're going to show me to the door downstairs, and I'm going to kind of trust my natural inclinations and intuition. How to get to New York. So would you please point me in the right direction to walk?
No.
Or would you kindly take me to the shore where I should swim?
Sure.
So I'm going to trust the natural processes of life to get me to New York. Now, I've heard that it's, you know, got to do a bit of walking, we have to do a bit of swimming, so I'm just going to, you know, just take you to the door. I'm just going to kind of some other trust in nature to get me to New York. Now, what would anybody say to that?
It's not going to happen.
Why?
Because the world's like, some people want to cheat you, some people want to risk, everyone has their own desires. Like, there's millions of desires of who wants to go there, who doesn't. Like, duality, some people won't want you to get this, some do. Maybe you won't, maybe you won't, you can't.
Well, I just got this feeling that if I just start walking, you know?
What's your feeling with it?
Well, it's just, you know, it's just what we all have, you know, and what we all got to go by, you know?
Sounds good to me.
No.
I'm not getting nervous. I'm just going to be like, really?
Hey, we're just starting.
If you have a massive logic thing, like, what if someone has a feeling to kill someone, and yeah, does that make the theory right? Like, I have a feeling to kill someone, good, but I feel like that is cool, I'll just come with it.
But I'm prepared to just take, you know, to go through life in that way, and, you know, go through the processes of life.
You're prepared.
And, you know, that's the lesson I got to learn, then. And who says that killing is wrong?
Krishna.
No, we don't bring Krishna. Don't bring this dog man. Don't bring this dog man.
That's the authority. It's like killing.
No, what authority? I mean, why limit yourself?
You're limiting yourself by thinking your mind's limited in that, like you just said before. But I know everything. I don't know what's around this corner.
Still, but you might as well, you know, just deal with things that you see best, even though you're limited.
Can I ask something, Clayton? Have you looked into any other religion before?
Yes.
How many?
Just the Christianity aspect. But it's all God. As long as they follow the basic word of God, they got it.
More unknown. Now we're going to Krishna the Gal. No, it's just too foggy for me, you know? I mean, you're just trying to limit yourself. I mean, whatever it is, it certainly can't have any name or anything specific. It's just got to be... Watch.
If you will take the first step to get into New York,
mm-hmm.
There's no way of knowing anything about New York until you get there anyway.
Right, so I...
You've got to sort of trust the natural process that if you take the first step, you'll gather information that will eventually lead you there.
Gather information? From who?
Well, you might walk past a trailer.
An authority? No way. I'm not taking his dog up with these travel agents. I'll take my own pass. But don't hand me any travel brochures. The truth is not in any book. It's too big for that.
What's the name of person?
I don't think the
analogy is very good. I think it's what told her. Yeah, it's okay, but really it kind of misses the point of what I was saying, which is more asking about the nature of Krishna consciousness than really about being me and my relationship with it immediately. I mean, it was more about Krishna consciousness relationship, because this stuff affects me, Krishna consciousness relationship to other one of the biggest dogma. Right,
well, this Krishna stuff, he gets a bit too, far out there for me. I'm basically just trying to get to New York, and he just brought up a point that really incensed me. Going to a travel agent, which means assuming that travel agent knows something more than me. It means recognizing an authority, and having that travel agent give me various books and so-called authoritative accounts. Now, why should I... First of all, I have my own ideas. Why do I need to depend on any travel agent? Okay. What's the real noble way I can do it? Just relying on myself. I mean, it sounds big. I just walk. Emma's going to take me out the door. I'm on Broadway and just trying to feel my way to New York. Without relying on any others. No dogma.
No help?
Right. No, because it's all within.
So what are you going to do? What if it's all within? That you create a situation where you get an easy way to get to New York instead of having to walk.
You just decide your own.
You come across a horse that seems to like you, so...
A horse?
Or something like that.
That's probably... That sounds really good. So I might run into somebody who offers me a horse to get to New York. Now that sounds good to me. I think I should check it out.
That's what playing my dog is.
No, I think I should check... Wait a minute. I think I should check out a horse to get to New York. I mean, sounds good to me. Could be exciting. It's one of those rich experiences of life. Horse to New York Museum. Definitely, it's part of a learning experience.
What's the difference between a horse and a plane ticket?
What's the same?
They both have tails. A plane and a horse, an airplane and horse both have tails. You're right, that's it. But that was enlightenment. My God, that was an incredible statement. Airplanes and horses both have tails. It's all one. Amazing. Amazing these things that turn up on the path of self-realization,
Yeah. So if the habit of the discernment between different religions is really the spirit, in the sense you think, I mean, I don't want to say this or positive wrong, the influence you encapsulate in the Krishna consciousness movement itself, is it more of a fruit and more of an atom which helps one to really live because you have this and because you carry yourself in such and such a manner. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to put ego on you because I think that would be very dangerous. I'm trying to cut around that and say, well, the Christian does this things differently. He's a bit more... It's been more angry, maybe a lot of generalization, but I hope everyone is talking. Maybe it's just really angry because you maybe walk differently. You walk differently.
You walk a difference,
And you want to say that your biggest sister, your horse, is the real one because it's designed with this, because it's the quickest.
Get out there on Broadway and kind of feel your way to New York.
So then if no one was here, I'd say by myself. If there's such a thing, it's probably hungry. If such a thing, and you weren't here, then Krishna just comes in.
Krishna, what's that?
I don't know.
New York, Krishna. These are just all.
How many characters? Are you assuming what character, or are you?
You're ridiculing the analogy to bring understanding. That.
No, I don't know.
What does Krishna want in New York?
Where are we going anyway?
Mm.
Well, that's the problem though, because when we brought in dogmas, New York doesn't exist. Because you said that the travel agent, the plan and everything was a dogma because you didn't want to rely on external entities, and in which case there was no understanding you could have ever seen New York yourself without having ever been there. And if you had been there, you could get back there. So without having been there, you really doesn't exist, so you can't go to something that doesn't exist. So wherever you went would be New York to you.
That's brilliant. So it's wherever I think it is, that's where it is.
But
I like
true,
that.
Because everything's labeled, and everyone's conditioned by these same labels. I'm still reading a book, I might bring this thing back.
So if I just change the label, if I just call Hamilton, New York, I'm there, right?
If that's the way you are, you are.
This is great! This is really right, I'm free!
But you really are, though, because you're no longer conditioned by the labels.
So
and labels is what takes us away from innocence, because we no longer see things or anything, because we see the label. Our mind brings up a little flip chart and thinks, yep, that's the chair.
So we just don't label anything.
Labels carry a lot of weight with them.
Mm-hmm.
Beliefs, feelings.
So if I just change the label from Hamilton to New York, then that's all I gotta do, right?
You're there. And if you're happy,
it's amazing.
Why do you truly believe it, though?
Truly, it's all up to me and let happen.
They can't even say that because you said it up to
reality
me.
Creation and reality realization. It's all to me. No, this is full blown. This is getting good. This is really spiritual.
We're probably paid for it. Don't worry what we think.
That'll be $10, everyone, for that great realization. That whatever you think, that's what it is. And when you realize that, you're free. Can I look at that? And no, $50 for the video, $20 for the audio cassette.
I have good enough for Ken.
Not very satisfied. So we have to find out where we are heading and what we should be heading to. That means we need information. If I'm going to New York, I want to find out information about New York. I want to find out the best way for getting there, and that means I have to find some authority on the situation. If we want to understand the Supreme Truth, how can we do that with limited senses? We do accept that our senses are limited. We do accept that our senses are subject to distorting things. They're prone to distorting things. Now, it seems like because we are finite, how can we ever grasp the infinite?
Don't need to grasp it. It's already.
Okay, that's it then.
You're ridiculing it.
No. I'm with it. I'm just with it. It's the enlightenment.
No.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
This is what I think you mean. That first of all, we have to understand some practical things. Am I this body and mind, or am I something else? Secondly, if I understand that I'm not the body and mind, that the body and mind are gross and subtle matter, if I understand that I'm spirit, soul, spiritual particle of consciousness that's wearing the temporary body and mind, the next question is, what is the source of all this material and spiritual energy? What is the source of all energy? Not simply electrical energy, chemical energy, nuclear energy. What's the source of matter and spirit? Then the next question would be, if I am pure spirit, what am I doing in a material body? And then the next question would be, not only do I not belong in the material body, but what is the nature of my life like without a material body? What is the nature of the existence of pure soul? And then, of course, I start to wonder, what is the nature of existence, but the nature of the source of everything? And in order to answer those questions, I will try to find the best possible information. For example, if you want to understand the source, what's the best way? Well, what could be a way? I got this. What could be a way?
I see.
What could be a way to find out about the source of all energy?
So if somebody comes to the venue, comes tonight?
Mm-hmm. And how would that person know?
Same.
From someone else to know. And ultimately, how would the first person in the link or the chain know?
You just simply knew?
No. Now you're coming to the value of Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, ordinarily you'd be right. Circular argument. But it's one finite person telling another finite person, and all just forms an endless loop. But if you want to understand the source, somebody has to take information directly from the source. Anyway, it seems to me that would be, if not the best way, the only way to understand the source. If the source is infinite, how can we, with our finite existence, appreciate infinity? But if infinity reveals to us, because the infinity has infinite possibilities, that means even to a finite entity, you can get some appreciation of the infinite by the potency of the infinite. But if you go the other way around, it doesn't work.
Still, there are finite entities describing where the description or path toward the infinite can be found. Thus the literature, even the publishers, even...
Then you still have to answer the question. Everyone is energy. There's energy everywhere. Alright. If you accept that there's a source of the energy, you might also accept that there is a controller of all energy. So that means, in spite of our being finite, we can be used by the infinite. We can be used by the controller of all energies. So that even though we are limited, when we are used by the unlimited, then our, shall we say, our limitedness is overridden. In other words, the whole basis of Bhagavad Gita is that the best way, and indeed the only way, to understand the ultimate source is to hear from the ultimate source. Why is that? Excuse me?
So it's a matter of choice, right? Choose either Krishna or Jesus or something like that. Choose and commit and involve yourself in it and then trust it.
So basically, yes, what I was saying then, the only way that a finite entity can understand the source is to take information from the source. That means our goal is to find the best possible, most complete information from the source, about the source. Now everything hopefully starts to land on a good firm ground here. You see, I wasn't just...
Yeah.
I wasn't just, you know, trying to ridicule anything.
Yeah, I realized that.
Okay, thank you. Therefore, things really become very focused now. That the only way to understand the source is to hear directly from the source. Let the source explain. And in Bhagavad Gita, for example, you had that going on. Now, it's your job to find out the best, most complete, comprehensive information coming from the source about the source. Otherwise, I may think like this, you may think like that. I may get a little glimpse of, you know, the example about the five blind men touching the elephant? Five blind men, you know, they didn't know what an elephant was, but they started groping with an elephant. One touched the trunk, the other said, "Oh, it's like a long hose." The other was grabbing the leg of the elephant. That's like a huge column. The other was scratching the skin of the elephant's body. And said, oh, it's like what? Like cowhide. Another one was touching the tusk of the elephant and saying, oh, it's like a big tooth. So everybody had a little part of the reality, but it was beyond them to put the whole thing together.
I should have asked the elephant what it was.
Right. That's a good point. So in Bhagavad Gita, you have, in terms presented by Bhagavad Gita, you have the ultimate source explaining, I am like this, I am like that. Now it's our job to decide through study and practice, could this be true? Or is there some better understanding of the ultimate source of reality? I think it makes things very simple. What do you think, Sam?
No, I just missed it. Said it last.
It's our job to decide and find what is the best source of knowledge, the most comprehensive source of knowledge about the ultimate source of reality. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I am this, I am that. Now, if we're going to say, well, I don't think so, then we must have something else in mind.
I'm
looking at everybody. Yeah, now you got it. That's Friday night. We deal with the big questions. The whole enchilada. If I want to know Clayton, what shall I do? I can just sit here and speculate. Clayton, blue socks. Yeah. Blue socks means he lives on Blue Street. I can just, you know, probably get Clayton. Actually, no real name. No real person, just a nameless energy over there, the whatever. Yeah. Well, I could I'll ask you about Clayton. What do you think?
I can't even think of what I'm doing.
It doesn't work.
So I'll find someone to speculate in here. Obviously, someone will finally tell me that. Why don't you just ask Clayton, you know, to tell about himself, where he's from, what he does.
I know there's one truth.
But do you? Clayton himself.
That's a good question.
What is it?
But the point is, the best way for me to get knowledge from Clayton is to hear from Clayton. Similarly, the best way to get knowledge about the absolute truth is to hear from the absolute truth. If you can do that, then you're home free. So therefore, the best thing to do is to evaluate Bhagavad Gita in terms of, is this the most comprehensive understanding or presentation of knowledge of the Supreme, or is it not? Because the only way you're going to understand the Supreme is to take knowledge from the Supreme, because it's beyond our senses. It's beyond our range of comprehension. Otherwise, we'll spend our whole life like the five blind men, you know? Oh, it's a big tomb. Oh, no, it's a big column. No, it's like cowhide. No, it's, you know, it's a big floppy leaf of cauliflower. Someone's pointing on your ear. It's a big, you know, cauliflower leaf or something. We'll spend our whole life like that. So Bhagavad Gita is based on that plain and simple point. If you are going to understand the Supreme, you must take knowledge from the Supreme. Otherwise, as he was saying, you're just dealing with a closed loop. one person thinks something and tells another person, and the other person tells the other person.
But if we're resembling the blind man, and yet we're all touching the elephant, we're all touching the same thing.
True.
None of us are ever going to see the elephant, because we're all blind, but we're all touching different parts of the same thing.
True. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that you're always dealing with his energy, whether material or spiritual. You never get away, but because you're not conscious of that, that's where all the trouble is. You're unaware. And you pay a price for unawareness. That's the message of Bhagavad Gita. What you don't know hurts you. you don't want me to use my famous example of driving on the right-hand side of the road again, do you? So anyway. How does anyone here know who their mother is?
Well, the story of a father, maybe?
He hopes. But who really knows? Who really knows? I mean, we're just being... Who really knows?
Mother.
Right. In other words, who your father is inconceivable to you. Unless your mother tells you. Mother knows. I mean, that is a traditional example. These days, you know. But anyway, you get the point. That who your father is inconceivable to you. Otherwise, how are you going to find out who your father is? You're going to wander around the whole city asking, "Are you my father? Are you my father?" Or you can start speculating using logic and reason. You can start thinking, "He looks like me. Maybe he's my brother, because he looks a little bit like me. So I'll ask him who his father is, and that's probably my father too." This is logic and reason. But there's a lot of people who could look like you, but you're not from the same father. But if you simply ask the authority, the mother is the authority, then you get the knowledge. Haven't you experienced sometimes that there are children who've grown up with a stepfather, or they've been adopted and never been, no one told them until they were 13 years old or something? You know people like that? Yeah, well, there you have it. With their imperfect senses, they concluded, "This man's my father. He's been taking care of me since birth." But then when they were 13, they were suddenly told, "Actually, it's not your real father." So the mother is the authority. So that just shows us how dependent we are on authority, even in the most practical things. Now what would we say? "Oh, this is, I'm not taking any dharma from my mother. I don't listen to her." Similarly, the authority on what goes on in this world is the source of the world. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, he's the seed-giving father of all living entities. The spirit soul is injected into the womb of material nature. And then living entities, they take their birth in different forms. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna claims that the material bodies are his material energy, the spirit soul, the eternal spiritual soul, that's his spiritual energy. Now, what do we just say? Maybe? Or shall we? No, no way. If we are actually intelligent, we must find out the best information about the Supreme.
We should ask Shakti.
We
should ask Shakti.
Shakti?
Mother.
What do you mean by that?
The mother being like being on the nose.
Mother means, it has a Sanskrit term called Veda Mata. The Veda literatures are considered mother. They tell you about father. You cannot ask material nature. are various kinds of mothers. So if you open Bhagavad Gita, you are reading from Veda Mata. Mata means mother. Veda means knowledge. You're reading mother, and she's telling you about the father. Now, someone may say, but there's Christianity, there's this, there's that, there's the other. Like you were asking, are you studying the other religions?
What's there wrong with that?
No, I didn't say anything wrong with it. But the point is, what you're trying to get is the maximum information as possible about the supreme, the source of all energies. So once you start looking in that direction, then things become very focused. You want to know, what is matter? What is spirit? What is spirit doing embedded in matter? What is the nature of material existence? What's the nature of pure spiritual existence? So this narrows our job as human beings. We're meant to find out from the Supreme, the greatest storehouse of knowledge coming from the Supreme. Because we know, we've already decided, it's quite clear, left on our own with our imperfect minds and temporary lifespans, we cannot get more than, at most, a smattering of knowledge. We'd be like five blind men touching the elephant. Because we're finite and we're dealing with infinity. So this is the advantage of Bhagavad Gita. If you study it, you'll see, you'll agree that there is no more comprehensive knowledge presented about the Supreme Reality. In Bhagavad Gita, I mean, it's a very nervy book, you know. how often do you read a book where someone says, I'm the origin of everything spiritual material, everything emanates from me? Have you read any books like that?
The science fiction.
Huh?
The science fiction.
Right, but you know, how many books have you read that, you know, not science fiction, but someone saying, this is the way it is?
Of course, very good. Yeah,
right, so, all right, so we should check it out then. Makes our job very easy. Otherwise, you can read so many metaphysical books, so many magazines, this and that. You know, all have little glimpses, perhaps, at most. But if we always stand a chance for definitive knowledge, we have to take it directly from the Supreme. And what's the use of talking about the Supreme, the ultimate God, unless we actually get a full understanding of this Supreme, this ultimate? Why should we just arbitrarily say, oh, there's no names, no this, no that, and why should we just say that? Suppose instead of, this is an ordinary example, instead of my getting to know Clayton, I would just, there's just nothing over there. It's just a whatever over there. You could consider me quite British and insensitive, wouldn't you? So that is Bhagavad Gita's point about our conditioned attitude towards understanding the Supreme. We like to bathe in ignorance and just say, anyway, it's just whatever you think. It's the whatever. Beyond words and can't be described, so...
Not necessarily.
No, I'm speaking in general. But you may talk. That's okay.
When you say whatever, you're putting it out to being plural, to being one of many things. What I ask is whether, say, the Bhagavad Gita or Krishna consciousness could exist without language systems at all.
What's wrong with language?
I'm not saying anything's wrong with language, I'm just posing the question, could it exist without language systems? Now, in other words, it gives a description of the Supreme, of the infinite, but it also describes a distance to get there. Sometimes without language systems.
What's this about distance?
It describes a path to get there.
If you read Bhagavad Gita closely, you'll find that the means is the same as the end.
still, surely, but still, there is reading to be done. Language system. It's a
You're making a prejudgment. I just gave you a hint.
No, it's an actuality.
No, you're making a judgment. I just gave you a big hint. You're assuming that language is just some kind of like bandage or some temporary bridge, or I'm hinting to you that the language of Bhagavad Gita is the means and the end.
Exactly. Certainly, I understand that.
Maybe.
If this is the means and the end, so is it how you read it? Because
yes.
So to, for me to reach the end through the means, I would have to make this quantum leap through reading it as not leave myself in a pretty humble little short hint that has read here. Yes, you do speak.
Otherwise, nothing.
But why read this at the end? I'm gonna see Krishna at the end because it's the means to the end. I mean, like a miraculous change through the. There's a passion, the passion of some passions. The thing, the height of the passion, I'm going to see it in here, like a materialistic perspective, I'm going to see it.
If you follow the instructions of Bhagavad Gita, then you have the end.
I'm not really saying anything, by the way.
I know. So, we can call this part one. I don't know if you'll miss dinner, but it's been a very educational discussion for me.
Are you sure?
No, it's almost 8 o'clock. Time flies. But I hope we have all have some things to think about.
Okay. Well, I did.
And I may take dinner. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Decide whether we should go ahead with our scheduled format, or since we're all veterans, we can have kind of a more, but we can talk about something else.
Yes, would you be able to explain to me God glorification sacrifice?
What's that?
God glorification sacrifice.
Yes, we can answer that.
Do you want the translation?
Right now, but alright, I'll start in. We'll start in and see where it goes. How serious you all are. Adept persons, competent, intelligent, discriminating, wise in the ways of the world. So I was curious. I asked this question before in Christchurch, one of our public gatherings. I think that's a very interesting answer. What is it that would discourage or inhibit you about practicing Krishna consciousness?
We'll
have an honest round table discussion, regardless of whether it is something you consider core or even something you consider superficial, but still less. Whatever. Taking into account that Bhagavad Gita says, everyone is acting, everyone's doing something. No one fails to act even for a moment. This is the underlying point in Bhagavad Gita, that action must be there. even a yogi who's sitting on top of the Himalaya mountains in meditation, he's also active. Although he's physically inactive, his mind is active. And also, Bhagavad Gita will teach you that desire is also a kind of activity, very subtle, it's the most subtle form of activity. It's like the fragrance of a flower. Very subtle, but it's there. So, we all are active. I'm active. They're active. You're all active. So it's not like we're not investing our energies in things. And it's not that we don't have our goals. It's quite popular these days, or getting to be more popular, that people say, no need to have a grand goal. Just take every day as it comes. And adjust yourself accordingly, like you're sailing a sailboat. Of course, after all is said and done, you can always find a goal, a grand goal underneath even the goalless people. So taking all this into account, I was just curious. You all have been coming here for a while. You know a little bit about Bhagavad Gita to bear. Some of you may know a lot. No, something. You have some idea, some notion, what Krishna is, what Krishna consciousness is. So, just to help in our interaction with people and making us more sensitive. So instead of me always saying things or whatever speaker is here, I figured we turn it over to you. For a change. If you are ruminating over all the various things you can do with your life or things you can investigate, you know, for example, if you were thinking, perhaps you should try out for the All Blacks, then you would think, well, I'm not big enough. I don't have that ability. Or I think, perhaps you should go to the uni and get your degree or an advanced degree. Then you think, I don't feel like going through all that studying and, you know, I don't feel like being a student or can't stand being locked up in classrooms or something. But in other words, we always think about these kind of things. Or you had an opportunity perhaps to consider going to London, but then you think, I just like fly all the way over there. And, you know, we're always, you know, processing various decisions. So then, let's just say you thought, oh, Hare Krishna, Krishna consciousness, what's that? I was curious what your mind would freely associate with that, what would come up in your mind. So, without further ado, I turn it all over to you. Raja, you want to start off?
I'll let someone else speak.
Yeah, say whatever you like, you know, it's sweet. Or anyone else?
Can you start more back at that question that you need to ask?
Yeah.
So what would inhibit us?
Yeah, what would inhibit you? When you're thinking of various things that you could toy around with or explore, when you think of whatever you know about Bhagavad Gita and Krishna consciousness, what would inhibit you from, you know? Just like we're doing market research. You know, well, why wouldn't you buy this product? Well, the price is too high, I don't like the label, or I don't need it, or, you know. Yeah. Sometimes you see advertising like that, why not Toyota? Why should you not have a Kelvinator for your home? Yes.
Mind concoctions? Like the mind wants all its own opinions, and you don't want to drop your own opinions because there's no discipline in them. That's for me.
No discipline in what?
In my own mind concoctions, like if I make my theories on life, there's no discipline to follow them. That's like an easier path.
Oh, I see. If you make your own notions and your own standards, then you don't have to have any discipline.
Yep.
Because you can make them and break them as you like.
Yep.
That's an honest answer. And that implies what?
don't know. Go through my Krishna consciousness at this phase and I stop speculating and everything. Drop all my own opinions and never listen to my own mind. And just say, hey, this book.
You have a pen and paper? You did. You can write this down. Okay. Stop on my own mind and follow some book. Anything else? He said whatever he wanted to.
Well, for me, I'm not sure what it means. I know what would inhibit me would be probably my own attention or something like that, but what would inhibit me from following Krishna consciousness, I'm not sure what that is.
That's
mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You've read by me a little bit?
I don't know what I've done on
Friday. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Nice, so. In other words, is it what you're saying that before you do something or explore something, you need to know more about it?
Yeah.
And,
well, unfortunately.
And you're kind of like that with everything you do in your life?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
One would be, what would inhibit me would be, the activity that I'm doing, I'm quite focused in on it, and I see a lot of similarities aligned with some Krishna consciousness. And I think some of the things that would inhibit me also, some of
well, first of all, you said the activity you're doing, can you be more specific? Is it parachute gliding or something? Or?
Oh, no, more like on a spiritual experience. And taking it through with disciplining my body and mind.
So you're doing that?
Yeah. And, I'm sort of exploring,
mm-hmm.
and it seems, and a lot of the things that I've been doing aligned with not Krishna consciousness.
Can you, would you mind being specific?
Say for example, I've started being vegetarian about 4 years ago,
mm-hmm.
But like I've found out in the last couple of weeks. That some Krishna consciousness don't eat onions and garlic.
Mm-hmm.
And I was asking a couple of questions about the ignorance, mode of ignorance, and I found out that there was a chapter 14 that I need to read and just go through and try and understand that. Getting up early, doing exercising, Tibetan vagrants, and stretches early in the morning, about 4 o'clock, up to about 6, and meditation, and carrying that, and maintaining a discipline to, I think a lot of it would be getting rid of just being with whoever, instead of being the judgmental part of me coming through. Like if someone comes along and they do something, then I'll discipline my thoughts around the judging of the person and just allowing them just to be who they are, and that's for them to be and act and however they want to act. So that's the sort of practice that I'm at the moment.
What kind of meditation is this?
I'm just trying to be still. I find it quite difficult to slow or stop the chatter. Just being chatter in my mind, trying to keep it nice and clear, and but all these things keep flowing in and...
And what, if I had to ask, what motivated you to try to still your mind?
The noise. It's
So it's something you yourself decided to do.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's just too much.
And you kind of devise your own meditation to still your mind.
Oh, no, I meet with a group of people and just do exercise with them, but I just sort of do my own little bits after exercising in yoga and just having to have sort of similar interests in a spiritual path. Like sometimes we come here and listen, get different concepts and things and understand it. Just like, oh, I don't know. Well, then.
Will you skip you or get up?
No, I said more.
Oh, that's right. Fraser, I think.
I mean, for some strange reason, I don't want to limit myself. I agree with a lot of the understandings. Something just makes me hold back. And all my life, although my life isn't very big, I mean, all my life, I rely on myself, so it seems hard not to rely on yourself. It's a very... Yeah, I can't think of it, you know, but it's very shocking to the system to think, you know, shucks, maybe the way I think. It's just the conditioning to get everything that I want. There's a stronger source, but at times weigh that up rationally, because...
You said it very brilliantly, but... I didn't point out, you did say something, you said it very brilliantly, but go on.
Okay. Probably... I mean... I noticed with the guys, when I went to Wellington with them, with Bhakti Mandalik and Sundin Raj, and everyone, they all wanted to stay celibate, like... You know, all their lives, they just wanted to be monks, and I find that sort of hard, that sort of, that's sort of like my plan end in life. Yeah, and I could keep going.
Go on.
Go on.
Yeah, Steve says go on. Very educational. I think this is good, you know.
Yeah, I guess that's about it.
The most important thing last.
I think that was it.
No, I was asking, was the most important thing last?
Oh, no.
Okay.
I think this is the one I need to.
What?
A lot I need to weigh out for myself first.
Mm-hmm. You want to limit yourself. What does that mean? Can you, just for my benefit, could you expand on that more?
Okay. Well, if you follow one specific discipline, then that's it. Okay, regardless of if it is, you know, like the be-all and end-all as such, then if all I do is follow that, I'll never know what anything else has to offer. Whether it be nothing, whether it be something.
Can we ask you?
Certainly, yes. Okay. I suppose the one area I have a bit of difficulty with is the fact that it is the sense of focus on the one thing, which is Krishna. And I suppose I feel the same in the fact that I think there might be more out there, and I'm just at a point in my life where I'm searching. I'm not quite sure. So, is there just the one guiding light, which is Krishna, or is there something beyond that?
Yeah.
Is there, I suppose, what you might call Brahman? And at the moment, I just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking, I'm searching, I'm questioning.
Okay. Any ideas about how you will search and what to search for?
Through meditation. Through coming down here on the Friday night,
mm-hmm.
through doing meditation classes elsewhere, through reading books, not just this book, but reading other books, through talking to other people,
mm-hmm.
through, you know, reflecting what their thoughts are and what their aspirations are, mm-hmm. just basically keeping your eyes and ears open all the time, including the Friday night.
Keeping your eyes and ears open all the time.
And your senses. That's what's wrong with you.
No.
And your
that's what you operate with.
Yes.
That's also a sense.
Yeah.
So you have all that down, all these points? For those of you who came late, we're having a discussion every once in a while we do this, not too often, but we're asking everyone that you have so many options in life, so many things that you might choose to explore or even dedicate yourself to. Now, when you think about Krishna and Bhagavad Gita and the topics and processes we're discussing on Friday night, what inhibits you from delving in that direction further? We've had answers from all different kinds of answers. Doing a little market research, you know. It's like you see these advertisements, you're explaining to some of these advertisers, why not Toyota? Why wouldn't you buy a Toyota? And then of course you would respond, well, I don't have enough money, or I like the Ford better, or I don't like cars anyway, or cars pollute, or who knows. That's what everyone's been talking about, in case you wonder when you came in. Can we turn to one of our late arrivals? Okay.
Yeah, me for you too.
I guess that for me, I have felt a huge sense of a grandiose sense of oneness and a sense of selflessness to that oneness on a few occasions in my life, and very much enjoy seeking that further and moving toward that shore. But as yet, I'm not prepared to give it a name. Because it is almost seems nameless. It is a sensation. All senses, yes. As yet, I'm not prepared to give it a name. Assign a certain doctrine to it that I think would be most applicable or move for a particular path and want to get toward it. I guess really it's enough for me, that sort of feeling of enoughness. And it really is when I am close to, in the bush, I guess. In the nature, beside a river, it's a state of enoughness, and all is quiet. There's no need to do much more at that point. At this point in my life, there is no calling to do much more. I can give up to the actions that can be handled quite
well. I think those people are quite domestic.
Is that
right? Yeah, that's a joke.
He seemed enlightened already. I said no.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm really scared of sensitizing myself to things, and I feel like the potency of things has been taken out, and I'm just real careful about what I say, because you say things you don't really believe, because you're just being social. So I pay much respect to Krishna, because when you look into their statue's eyes, you want to do something kind of. But I pay respect to a lot of things, but I can't really say that much. I like to try not to use language.
So the question is very much like Krishna, why not?
Well, whatever you know about Krishna or Bhagavad Gita, just whatever you know. Mm-hmm. Whatever you think you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just up your whole thing, just get out what you
do. I'm not very much sold on Krishna, am I?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I'm pretty much sold on Krishna, but and at the moment I guess what I'm trying to do is experience your truth. So what's in the Bhagavad Gita, and if I can experience truth, then I'll adopt it now. I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And if it works out that I can't, then obviously I have to think, well, have I kind of missed the truth boat, or is it not true?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Well, this has been very helpful.
How would you explain that situation?
As that young man was saying, then, where...
What's your name?
That's right, no, sorry, I don't know your name.
Oh, Clayton.
Clayton, okay, what Clayton just said then, where he pursued our Krishna consciousness, and if he couldn't find the truth in it, he may move on, or he will move on. What if he were to pursue Krishna consciousness for so long, but then not find any real understanding or any real feeling or any real whatever? I don't know, I've never believed in anything 100%. But if I apply myself to this Krishna consciousness, and what say you didn't find it, what do you do then? You accept that maybe that isn't?
You never believed anything 100%.
Yeah.
You never thought you were the body.
For a while?
So you believe something 100%.
That's stuck in the phone box.
Steve's giving you look like very rational, very logical.
But I mean, it is though, because if you were told that the world was flat, which is what they used to think, you believe that the world was flat. And until you actually start to think about it, you'll never know the truth. Once you start to think about things, then you can find out that the world actually isn't flat, it's round. But I mean, if people had never thought, they would have never known.
Second one, the analogy, so what if the world is kind of what it's flat? What does it mean? What's it going to do to me? I could still die tomorrow. I mean, maybe I'm using your analogy wrong.
No, that's fine. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to come up with the labels at the moment, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, the freaky thing anyway, just get a name to name. Mm-hmm. And the thinking about it would change it, maybe more experience as well.
Would change what?
Say an example of things like this, it's been flat. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about it, suddenly realizing that it's round. It might take more than that. It might take experience in the room. Mm-hmm.
Why would it be so hard to move towards the truth?
Are you?
I mean, no, I'm not trying to be lazy. You know.
I mean, are you?
I should be spooning.
Are you? Shall we say? Making an overture and stirring things, is it?
No, I'm not trying to stir things.
No, I'm not saying. You know, I'm just asking. Are you? You're saying, once again, what were you saying?
What did I say? Mm-hmm. I said, why would it be so hard to move towards the truth?
Well, since our Friday night, so we're discussing Bhagavad Gita, and Bhagavad Gita explained that we have two problems in trying to understand the truth. Number one is that our senses are imperfect. There is a material body. Material body means senses. And these senses include the mind. They are imperfect. They are limited. They can't perceive everything. As you well know, cats can see. What else you can see? Dogs can hear sounds you can't hear. And not only are the senses limited, but they also distort. You don't feel the earth moving. And the sun does not look to your eye as big as it actually is. Okay, that's one half. That, you can appreciate this first part, right? Now there's a second part, which is maybe a little more difficult to accept, that because we have pollution that we are inheriting from previous lives, that this pollution inhibits our ability to understand the truth. Just like when you're driving down the street on a rainy day and it's a muddy street, mud will spot all over your windscreen and you can't see. That's your reaction for driving in the mud. So, that's the other half. That's why Krishna explains in the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita that only those who are free from a background of bad karmic activities, only those kind of persons can be eligible to understand it. So once again, there are two halves to this issue. First half is our senses, the sense problem. Senses are imperfect and they distort. The other half, however, is by our acting in the world, in this life and in previous lives, without understanding universal law, we implicate ourselves in so many karmic activities and we get reaction. And what is the reaction? Mud on the windscreen. We can't see where we're going. So therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that if you want to understand the Supreme Truth, then you must have put an end to your bad karmic activities, you could say, sinful activities, and that you actually should have a background of cultivating good karmic activities of righteousness, as conventionally known, and you should no longer be attached to the dualities of delusion, honor, dishonor, happiness, distress, poverty, wealth. In that kind of preliminary condition, with those kinds of preliminary qualifications, you can effectively search for the truth. But otherwise, without understanding, in all humility, that our senses are limited and imperfect, and without understanding that we're saddled with a burden of pollution from previous lives, we're going to be spinning our back wheels in the mud. That's it.
Makes sense to me, because you're carrying enough pollution from old lives, it's going to cloud any clarity of truth coming through.
In other words, what Bhagavad Gita will explain to is that knowledge is state specific. According to your state of consciousness, that determines what you can understand. In other words, it's not that you can just understand anything and everything, whether it's ordinary mathematics or transcendental knowledge, Krishna consciousness. It's not you can just understand anything without taking into account the quality of your consciousness.
Can this be achieved by any means? Must it be by Krishna consciousness? Must it be?
Okay, let me just make sure I... So is that enough to... I'm sure we could talk for hours about this, but that's enough to give you something to reflect upon. Okay. Are you okay with this?
Well, I was just wondering whether it must be achieved by Krishna consciousness. For you personally, does your enjoyment of it or your love of Krishna consciousness rely on its the infallibilities of other dogmas? What is your personal experience with other philosophical traditions or dogmas?
What do you mean by dogmas? That has a traditional usage, that word. Now, these days has a very, not saying you meant that, but also has a very negative usage. Most people, they don't remember the original usage of the word. They think it just means, dogma means anytime somebody tries to lay a trip on you, basically. If you haven't thought of it, it's dogma. As he was, before you came, he was saying that one problem he had with the Bhagavad Gita and Krishna consciousness is that all his life he's had his own opinions. And he very humbly explained that the good thing about simply having his own opinions and making his own standards is that there's no discipline required. You can make your own standard, break it whenever you want to. So, and generally, anything that doesn't come out of your own mind, you think, you call that dogma or something imposed upon you. So he made that point very nicely. So now you're asking,
is it just as likely that there are other means of achieving the same sense of purity or understanding of the imperfection of the senses or anything like that? Other means of doing that are just as valid, and is because through reading and living the lessons of Swami Prabhupada and Bhagavad Gita by going through this process, is that to say that there aren't other means of achieving the same ends?
Alright. First then, we have to understand what the end is. Just like if you're looking for gold and don't know what it is, you're going to leave yourself open to be cheated. For example, if you go to a hardware store and ask for gold, the owner, all kind of fool is this. He'll go in the back of the store, come out with some yellow to pay some metal yellow, and here's gold. And so you have to know what you're looking for. Otherwise, how will you recognize? How will you know how to search? You have to know what you're looking for. So what Bhagavad Gita is doing is actually training you up in what you should be looking for. And in doing so, the purports actually tell you and explain to you what is the real thing and also what are alternative opinions you might have. It's a process of explaining reality and illusion side by side.
So Krishna consciousness is the only disillusioned state that anyone can possibly...
Okay, now still, there's no way we can answer that question unless we understand what is it that we're looking for. Now what would you call a disillusioned state?
It's not really something that I myself am prepared to answer outright, so much as I'm being interested in what the Krishna consciousness would define.
Alright, so you're honestly saying that you may not know what is a disillusioned state, but basically you're just...
I'll know when I'm disillusioned when I get there. I just don't know.
So you're trusting?
Yeah.
What?
Trusting that I will get there, I guess.
And what are you trusting?
Trusting the natural process and also trusting...
The natural process of what?
Of purification or...
What natural? Can you please elucidate on this natural process of purification?
There really is nothing more to be said except the fact that I'm prepared to go through life and reap the riches of abundant deep understanding, like the Bhagavad Gita, pick up this and then maybe move to the philosophy of the Maasai hut building. I don't know. That's all good. It's all good.
So, but you're now. I'm seriously trying to understand. It's something you're trusting.
Trusting the natural process of moving through life.
Alright, write that down. Trusting the natural process of moving through life and moving through time.
Yeah.
As well.
And understanding my own intuitive.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Let's say I want to go to New York, and I don't know where New York is or what it's about. I just heard about New York. So, Emma, you're going to show me to the door downstairs, and I'm going to kind of trust my natural inclinations and intuition. How to get to New York. So would you please point me in the right direction to walk?
No.
Or would you kindly take me to the shore where I should swim?
Sure.
So I'm going to trust the natural processes of life to get me to New York. Now, I've heard that it's, you got to do a bit of walking, you have to do a bit of swimming, so I'm just going to, just take me to the door. I'm just going to kind of some or other trust in nature to get me to New York. Now, what would anybody say to that?
It's not going to happen.
Why?
Because the world's like, some people want to cheat you, some people want to do this. Everybody has their own desires. Like, there's a million desires of who wants you to go there, who does this.
Right.
Duality, some people won't want you to get this, some do. Maybe you won't, maybe you won't, and you can't.
Well, I just got this feeling that if I just start walking, you know?
What's your feeling, though?
Well, it's just, you know, it's just what we all have, you know, and what we all got to go by, you know?
Sounds good to me.
Right.
I'm not getting over the sound anyway.
Hey, we're just starting.
If you have a massive logic thing, like what if someone has a feeling to kill someone, and that, does that make the theory right? That I feel to kill someone, but I feel like that is cool, I'll just come over.
But I'm prepared to just take, you know, to go through life in that way, and, you know, go through the processes of life. And, you know, that's the lesson I got to learn, then. And who's, anyway, who says that killing is wrong?
Krishna.
No, don't bring Krishna. Don't bring his dog mane. Don't bring his dog mane.
That's the authority. It's like
authority? I mean, why limit yourself?
You're limiting yourself by thinking your mind. Your mind's limited, man, like you just said before. Like, I know you think. I don't know what's around the next corner.
Still, but you might as well, you know, just deal with things as you see best, even though you're limited.
Can I ask you something? Have you looked into any other religions before?
Yes.
How many?
The Christianity aspect. But it's all God. As long as they follow the basic word of God, they got it.
More on there. Now we're going from Christian to God. No, it's just too foggy for me, you know? I mean, you're just trying to limit yourself, I mean. Whatever it is, it certainly can't have any name or anything specific. It's just got to be what?
If you will take the first step to getting to New York,
mm-hmm.
There's no way of knowing anything about New York until you get there anyway.
Right. So I.
You've got to sort of trust the natural process that if you take the first step, you'll gather information that will eventually lead you there.
Gather information from who?
Well, you might walk past a travel agent.
An authority? No way. I'm not taking dogma from any travel agent. I'll make my own path. And don't hand me any travel brochures. I don't need it. The truth is not in any book. It's too big for that.
What's the natural process?
I think that's what it got written in.
Yeah, but I don't think the analogy is very good. I think it's sort of told them.
Yeah,
it's okay, but really, it kind of misses the point of what I was saying, which is more asking about the nature of Krishna consciousness than really about being me and my relationship with it immediately. I mean, it was more about Krishna consciousness relationship, because this does affect me, Krishna consciousness relationship to other ones that believe in the dogma. Right,
well, you know, this Krishna stuff is getting a bit too, you know, far out there for me. I'm basically just trying to get to New York, and he just brought up a point that really incensed me. Going to a travel agent, which means assuming that travel agent knows something more than me. It means recognizing an authority, and having that travel agent give me various books and so-called authoritative accounts. Now, why should I? First of all, I have my own ideas. Why do I need to depend on any travel agent?
Well, you don't, right?
Okay. I mean, now you're talking. Okay. What's the real noble way I can do it, just relying on myself? I mean, it sounds
good.
You... Yeah, I just walked. Emma's going to take me out the door. I'm on Broadway and just trying to feel my way to New York. Not relying on any others. No dogma.
No help.
Right. No, because it's all within.
So what do you... What if it's all within that you create a situation where you get an easy way to get to New York instead of having to walk? You just decide your own.
You come across a horse. He needs to like you, so...
A horse.
Or something like that.
That's probably... That sounds really good. So I might run into somebody who offers me a horse to get to New York. Now, that sounds good to me. I think I should check it out.
That's what's playing my dog, man.
No, no, I think I should check, wait a minute, I think I should check out a horse to get to New York. I mean, sounds good to me. Could be exciting. It's one of those rich experiences of life. Horse to New York from New Zealand. Definitely, it's part of the learning experience.
What's the difference between a horse and a plane ticket?
Horses have tails.
They both have tails. Plane and a horse, airplane and horse both have tails. You're right, that's it. Wow, that was enlightenment. God, that was an incredible statement. Airplanes and horses both have tails. It's all one. Amazing. Amazingly, things that turn up on the path of self-realization, you know? Yeah.
So it's how the discernment between different religions is really the spirit leads them to finding not only says or part of the throne, leads them to encapsulate in the Krishna consciousness movement itself. Is it more of a further, more of an island which helps them to be there because you have this intercourse, carry yourself in such and such manner. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to put ego on you because I think that'd be very dangerous. I'm trying to cut around that and say, well, a Christian does things differently. He's a bit more angry. Maybe a large generalization. So I hope everyone is possibly maybe if he's really angry, he maybe walk differently. You walk differently.
You always make a difference, you know.
You're going to say that your Pegasus or your horse is the real one because it's designed to be. It's the quickest.